We get things underway this hour by welcoming back to the program from Defector, the host of the Distraction Podcast, David Roth joins us. Hello, Mr. Roth.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. And, you know, as always, we like to cut right to the most important issues when you join us. And so I ask you this.
It's going to be about something I tweeted. I already know. Go ahead.
Who knew that being a driver for Amazon is like being an astronaut?
What a thrill. If they advertised it that way, it would be better. For people that are not online and have not been following Amazon's strange communication strategy of late, they seem to be kind of trying to post like a backbench conservative congressman. They're like quote tweeting Bernie Sanders and being like, bald much? And it's not going very well for them. They're getting kind of dragged for, especially for one thing that they tweeted at a representative from Wisconsin, who pointed out that people working in Amazon fulfillment centers often have to pee in bottles and sometimes poop in bags because they're not given long enough bathroom breaks. And it took 12 hours for them to go from, you don't really believe that's true, right, to there being a story in The Intercept with like multiple sources, including memos from Amazon internal sources, acknowledging that it is in fact both true and like a problem.
So,
which I, you know, I guess when you're Amazon, you can afford to just take that loss. It's like, what, you didn't lose $1 billion. You just got embarrassed on Twitter. Like that's not a bad deal.
No, I guess, it does make me concerned about opening those Amazon packages. Maybe even more than I am about opening my box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
What a story that is. Have you gone over the basics to your listeners?
We have, yeah. And then yesterday we shared the news that that this guy's married to Topanga from Boy Meets World.
I'm not ready to talk about that, if it's okay. If you don't mind, I'd just like to share the other stuff about it. I've been struck by the lack of an end game here. Again, even if we're going by like dumb things that happen online, I don't expect a super high level of tactical or strategic sophistication from that. But the guy that said that his son was in a balloon, like Balloon Boy's dad did more legwork going forward than this guy did. Like he basically pretended that he found some shrimp tails in a box of cereal when he probably didn't. And then I guess just, I don't know what the plan was from there to just like take all of the retweets that he got and vanish to a tropical island to spend them down for the rest of his days. Like it's really puzzling to me.
Yeah, we haven't quite understood that ourselves here. Hey, I really enjoyed the discussion you had on the latest podcast with film critic Amy Nicholson. Before we talk movies, though, do I need to get a Yeti cooler?
You're asking the wrong guy. Drew has been living the Yeti lifestyle, my co-host, and it seems like it's really working out well for him. I am just suburban enough and just, you know, mid-Atlantic enough that the idea of a cooler as a status symbol doesn't quite compute for me. I don't have any objection to it, but it's not the sort of thing that has ever really crossed my mind. But I know that for people of a certain, you know, like if you're looking to send a sort of message about rural affluence, Yeti apparently is your best bet.
Well, anyway, the movie discussion you guys had was terrific, and I thought I was laughing at Drew complaining that I don't want to sound like the old guy, and I am the old guy, but I find myself caught trying to find something that I will like in movies because I'm not a big superhero movie guy. I kind of like to watch movies about human beings, and there aren't all that many of those these days.
Yeah, that's so. My old guy gripe with that is that, I mean, I'm with you on the broad strokes there, but I'm also somebody that, like, you know, I watched a ton of movies as a kid. I worked in a video store when I was in high school. Like, I just watched movies at a very high volume, and a lot of them were bad, but they were these sort of like mid-budget, you know, sort of genre movies, you know, where like, even if it's just like a bunch of werewolves chasing a guy through a forest or whatever for a couple of hours, like, I'll take it. I'm not really very discerning about that, as you know, longtime listeners already know. And yet, like, there is, it seems like this dearth of movies that would fall in the middle between these kind of like micro-budget indies and Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff. And there has to be something that exists between the Florida Project and the Avengers to me. Like, and I have really struggled to kind of find it. And I don't know if that's me. I mean, because I think one of the things about getting old is that it just gets, like, you find out about concerts you want to go to, like, 3 weeks after they happen when, like, a younger coworker mentions it. And you're like, oh, I wish I don't know, I guess I was busy that night. Like, if that's where I am with movies now, then, like, I'm way closer to the grave than I thought.
Well, I found I'm worried about myself because during the pandemic, this has become worse, which is I sometimes, quite often, just like to flip on Turner Classic Movies and watch things in black and white. For some reason, that's my video comfort food in the last year or so. And I mean, most of these are movies that were made before I was born, but every time I do that, I remember my grandparents toward the end of their lives when I would go to visit them, and at whatever hour of the day and night, they were in some sort of Murder, She Wrote, Matlock, netherworld where time stood still in about 1983.
There's definitely, it's a risk. I don't know what my version of that would be. I mean, I think it's probably like if I found the channel that had 30 Rock reruns on it, like it'd be over for me. Like, I would just, like, I would find out that my slippers somehow just didn't come off, and I just had to live my whole life like that now. Like a load-bearing bathrobe. But I think that with the Turner Classic Movie stuff, and I had this conversation with Drew a little bit on the podcast, but also just, you know, as buddies, that, like, something about older movies that I have especially found soothing during the last year or so is that they are, well, the good ones anyway, are very economical and very competent. So they tell a story in a compelling way with a little bit of color and a little bit of details, but not getting distracted. They're generally over in about an hour and a half. Like, that seems, again, like, you know, and again, it's hard not to do this without sounding like, you know, Statler and Waldorf, like, in the balcony. But there's something about that feels like a lost art. Like, the idea of, like, finding out, there's a lot of reasons why I haven't watched any Marvel movies, but one of the bigger ones, beyond the fact that I don't really care about them very much and that I'm grown, is that they're all like 2.5 hours. And if I was going to watch something that was 2.5 hours long, like, I guess I could just watch Apocalypse Now again or something, you know? And, like, I would probably feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah,
until the, you know, the very end.
And even the Netflix movie, we've talked about this, and you have watched the Hallmark movies, which is, you know, another level, but the Netflix movies all seem to be kind of, with few exceptions, bland and predictable and almost designed for pandemic times, that we're not going to challenge you much with these.
So I've been fascinated by that because I think that's correct, but I've also been struck by how kind of just crummy they look, which is not necessarily a function of cheapness, I don't think. It's clearly a choice that, like, a lot of them are lit the same way. Like, they look like Hallmark. And there's nothing about it that really, you know, they pay the money. They bring in good directors to, you know, especially on some of their limited series and stuff. You'll see people that were like the bright lights of indie film in the first 10 years of this decade. And you're like, oh, wow, like Lisa Cholodenko is directing episode 3 of this series. Neat, I guess. And yet, like, it kind of doesn't really matter. Like, they spend on the talent, and yet they seem like they're designed to be watched on your phone or something. Like, I'm really curious what the aesthetic behind that is. Say what you will about Amazon's Twitter strategy, I think a lot of their original productions look a lot more like movies.
I will say none of this applies to any films directed or written by friend of downtown Mark Duplass.
No, and well, he's one of those guys that successfully made that transition from, you know, micro-budget stuff to, like, you know, being an actor in big movies and stuff. But so I would love it if someone just gave him, I guess he does sometimes get these, like, $5 million romantic sort of comedy things that he can make himself. Like, I feel like more people should get to do that, too.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Let's shift to sports, the NBA, crazy trade deadline. I have officially reached that point, again, more old guy status. I have no idea who's on what team today.
It's going to be hard. What you need to know is that everyone named Gary in the NBA was traded yesterday, every single player. That's only 3 guys, but it's still kind of a lot. And I guess the other thing that's kind of salient is that it seems like the Celtics came pretty close, but didn't actually do anything.
But Danny talked a lot.
He really does. He really wants you to know that he was the runner-up for Aaron Gordon, which I guess they did make one trade. They did, I think, a pioneering one German galoot for another German galoot deal in Daniel Tice for Mo Wagner, which I guess is cool. It really depends on how desperate you are for transactions. I found the trade deadline to be kind of, like, some of the deals I think were interesting. Like, I'm interested in seeing especially, like, what the Nuggets look like and how they play with Aaron Gordon. I think that, like, he's a guy that just has been trapped in Orlando long enough that I keep forgetting that he's a real dude. And he's a brilliant talent and a brilliant athlete. It's just, like, this is really going to be the first time I'll have watched him in an NBA game that feels like a real NBA game.
How long can James Harden play well without turning back into the other James Harden?
I don't know. I mean, I'm curious about it. The Nets are clearly not pushing him too hard. They were on national TV the other night against the Jazz, and I was kind of excited to watch it. And it was one of those things where it was like, I was excited to watch it, but I was also excited to go to bed early once it became clear that they were just running the G League dudes out there, and the Jazz were up by 30 points in the first half. And Harden was kind of on the sidelines, like wearing his pajamas and stuff and like looking at the clipboards and everybody. It's strange. I don't think that I underrate him. Like, it's clear that he's like in his way, you know, one of, if not the best player in the league right now. There's just, I really do kind of struggle to take him seriously, I guess, just because of like his general bearing and because of the way that this season began in Houston. But I think, you know, they're awfully good. And that, you know, eventually it's going to be a matter of like seeing how good they are in the playoffs in more boring games against better teams. But I don't know how hard they're going to get pushed in the East, like really maybe through the NBA Finals. So I don't know. We'll see what kind of Harden we get. But I feel like if you get the sort of 70% playoff Harden of years past and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are healthy playing alongside of him, it may not matter.
Are you excited for the start of Major League Baseball season?
Yes. Desperately. I've had a hard time writing the last few weeks, and I have been aware of what's going on in spring training baseball, but also aware that it's important to keep your powder dry for when the games actually count. So I think you only really get, as a normal person, maybe one or two Shohei Ohtani blogs per year, and like I don't want to burn mine in March, you know. But it's weird to be like sort of watching it, and I mean it's a long season. I have some decently high hopes for the Mets, but I also know that, like, you know, I'm going to spend a solid month out of the next few fuming and muttering profanities while I, like, chop carrots in front of a lost baseball game. So, I mean, I know what's coming, and yet I'm still excited for it. So I think that says something about it. I mean, also just knowing that if everything goes according to plan, like, I'm going to get my shot and go to a baseball game this year. Like, that's, you know, something I do a few dozen times a year under normal circumstances. I have not been as excited for it since I was a little kid, though.
Well, and it's funny, maybe because the Red Sox were just so god-awful and unwatchable in whatever last year was, I just didn't pay that much attention, probably the least amount of attention I've paid to Major League Baseball since I was about 7. And so as I start looking at the season, I'm like, who are some of these guys? There are a lot of guys that...
They have a king of spring training candidate down there, Bobby Dalbec.
Yes.
Doing his, Mo Vaughn imitation right now.
And not just the Red Sox, but a lot of these young guys who came up last year, largely because of COVID and the kind of a lost season, who played, but I paid no attention to them. I like, that guy hit 9 home runs in 23 games. Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I made the decision to kind of just forget last year, or just, I didn't, you know, forget it. I watched the playoffs and stuff, but I'm just tossing out everything that happened during that season as a fluke. And that is, you know, that's a choice I can make. It's also like, it's wrong. Like, those stats are in a book that I can read, you know, and they're real. It just doesn't feel, it didn't feel right at the time. And like, I also kind of dropped out. I mean, the Mets were awful and it made it easier to do it, but it just didn't feel the same, you know, to be watching. It wasn't satisfying in that way. And so there is kind of, I guess maybe that's where the extra excitement comes in for me, is that like I'm watching it now and it's like I did watch games last year, but this feels like the first time in a long time that I've actually gotten to care about it. But I definitely know, I mean, what you're going through with the Red Sox was certainly, I think, something that I was feeling like early in, you know, before the Mets started adding these depth guys. I was just kind of like, I stayed away like last year. Like, I made these principal choices and I'm coming back and it's the same dingleberries vying for the 7th inning. It's fantastic. But they've upgraded their dingleberries, so that's a step in the right
direction. Right, dingleberries with potential, which is always so much better.
Yeah, ones that are in season. That's a nice way to talk about Mike Montgomery and Tommy Hunter. Just like a really bleak remembering some guys session that we're engaged in here now.
So I'm thinking about the presidency, and as someone who teaches history, I believe the bar has not been as low for a president since probably John Tyler, who took over after William Henry Harrison only lasted a month.
Like 3 weeks, yeah.
Right. Now, Biden doesn't have to do a lot to be a big improvement, but as low as that bar is, the people who are really underperforming, not that I should be surprised, are the National Press Corps, who begged for a press conference. And then, you know, with people dying and with possibly things going on at the border, depending on who you talk to, and the world on fire, their biggest need to know is, are you running against Trump in 2024?
So good. I couldn't believe, I had a similar thought, because it's like, it's not like, I think that presidents should have fairly regular press conferences. I don't think they're the most useful, but I think that, like, as far as our, you know, public civic rituals go, like, it's good to see the president get up there and, like, get asked the question and have to answer it. You know, like, it feels healthy. He was getting asked, like, between the amount of noise that was made demanding that conference, and then they get up there, and if they were basically asking the politics versions of those questions that you hear after a baseball game, where they're like, you gave up a home run on a changeup that didn't really fool anybody. Talk about that. Like, he was getting, like, locker room questions from the freaking Herald guys, only they were the politics version of that, which is even more useless. I think that it's obviously going to take a little while for everybody, me very much included, as someone who wrote about Trump a lot, to sort of adjust to a sort of a world, or even just like a sort of a discourse pattern, where you're not every day chasing some weird frenzied rabbit of, you know, speculation or bad faith argumentation or whatever. But I think they're going to need to, like, pick up the pace of adjusting a little bit to it, because, like, this is the part of it that I found, to the extent that I'm extending credit to Biden in this regard, it's like there's actual governing happening now.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly what you want, maybe, but it is, I think, the thing, it's the only real antidote to what we had the last 4 years, which was just, like, spectacle and then sort of, like, backroom rules maneuvering to make things worse, and then just, like, this sort of performed grievance from both sides.
But it's,
like, a bunch of money got spent, it's going to get spent on trying to, like, materially improve people's lives. And, like, and if you can't ask questions about that, or if you can't get interested enough about it to explain to people what's actually happening, then, like, as a political journalist, you're not doing your job at that point.
It's nice to know, though, that Ted Cruz is still being Ted Cruz and going to the border and claiming, among other things. I love his, we were heckled by cartels.
Heckled? My God. We were canceled by people in holding cells that were filled to 700% capacity. He's a, honestly, like, I don't like Ted Cruz. I don't know if that's going to, I'm sorry if I pushed your wig back with that hot take. I think he's a jerk. But I will say that, like, I admire that he's continually able to find another level of being repellent. That, like, he started doing something new with his hair, and I can't really tell what happens, but it looks like he just got, like, forcibly dunked into a toilet and then pulled back out and then is photographed at precisely the moment that he is removed. That, like, he's just more disgusting every time I see him.
Yeah.
And it's not his fault that he looks the way he does. It's just that, like, he always finds the oiliest, cheesiest way to center himself in a story, and there's just no reason why he should be at the center of any of it.
Good times indeed. Well, it's always good to catch up with you, David, and get perspective on things. We appreciate you joining us this afternoon, as always, and we'll do it again before too long.
Right on. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
It's David Roth from The Defector here on Downtown.